There have been over 800 California-based incidents of hate against Asian Americans since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Is hostility against the API community growing, or has it been there all along? Joining us today are California State Senator Richard Pan, California Asian Pacific Chamber of Commerce CEO Pat Bongkashida, and my sister's house CEO Nilda Guanzon Valmores. Senator Pan, according to Stop AAPI Hate, in the last 3 months, 42.9% of all anti-API incidents in the U.S. happened in California. What is your reaction to California being the home of such a high number of these incidents?
Well, certainly, very disappointed and frustrated that this has happened. But unfortunately, we also know that discrimination against API have been around for a while, and this pandemic unfortunately has brought this out. It's not been helped by some of the messaging coming out from certain leaders in government when it's being referred to as the China virus or the Wuhan flu or Kung flu. These all emphasize that Asians are to blame, particularly people from China, for this virus. That's also why, by the way, the World Health Organization and other public health authorities no longer name infections after the places which they were first identified. I'm not saying where they're from, where they're first identified. And I think that this kind of discrimination is unfortunately part of our history that we need to continue to work to eliminate in our society.
And Nilda, when people ordinarily are seeking the services of my sister's house, and they're coming in order to get relief, when you have situations like this going on, how does that affect the stress levels that end up causing the situations that drive people to your nonprofit?
Well, the first thing it does, Scott, is I think it prevents a lot of people from making that important call to get help because they're afraid of going, getting out the door. What will people say to them? They're afraid of their partner knowing and using the COVID virus possibly as an excuse. So it creates additional danger for women that are truly being victims of abuse.
And Pat, what do these statistics, as you hear them, tell us about our country in 2020?
I think that there's still a lot of work to do. I think that, despite all the progress we've made in this country around racial bias and equity, I think there's still a lot of work to do and a lot of education to accomplish. And that's why, a lot of our community is just angry, and disappointed, to Dr. Pan's point, but also it's really mobilized our community to take action. And so there has been conversations in California today about how we can better mobilize our community, how we can better educate, and how we can take action. And for the Chamber's part, our foundation is really taking a look at gathering and working with universities across the state around collecting really strong data to be able to tell our story better.
And Senator Pan, when you come back to Nilda's point of a few moments ago, talking about how this increases stress and potentially exacerbates conditions that are already present within the community, I'm curious, what's the relationship between the attacks that are popping up all over the place and the pandemic itself from your perspective?
So unfortunately, this kind of discrimination and also, frankly, hate certainly is a tremendous stress on the API community. We see it in various different layers, whether at the very beginning of the pandemic, when we saw a fall in people going to API businesses, particularly API restaurants, that was an issue for a lot of businesses, but also as the pandemic has spread and you've seen API being targeted with even physical attacks by people just for being API. We had to deal with actually in the journalism community where initial reports about the pandemic always featured API people who were not, you know, just being out in the streets as being the picture, the image of the start of the pandemic. And I know that fortunately, I think the journalism community heard from us that that's not appropriate, right? Now, every time you have a story about this pandemic, you have a picture of an API person walking down the street or groups of API people together, particularly those who are East Asian. So this has been certainly a tremendous challenge for the community. I think it's also, unfortunately, what we see is that even though many API have been in California and the United States for generations, we do recognize that most of us are actually are immigrants, but many for generations and that have grown up in our communities, we're still unfortunately seen as foreigners in our own land. We're not being treated as being full Americans and instead being viewed as foreigners who have brought a disease to our land when truthfully, when you actually look at the reality of what's happened, in fact, this particular virus probably, while it may have been first identified in Asia, actually many of the infections in the United States came from Europe, and that's just the nature of the virus. It's not to blame any particular person or area of the world for this particular virus.
Well, you know, Pat, there is a contrary view that you hear from some places that identifying COVID-19 as things like the Kung flu and things like that is humor and poor taste, but it's just humor and that we should all just get over it. How do you respond to that?
I think that labels, any type of labels that are attached or attributed to one sector of our community is harmful. And I think that it teaches our children and it teaches future generations to label. And I think that the characterization of Asians historically has been that, I guess, that viewpoint around Kung Fu and a lot of that activity. I mean, if you take a look at typical television in the 50s and 60s, and this is the in the 70s is when I grew up watching television, you know, that was the depiction of most of the Asian community out there was this, you know, Kung Fu, you know, stereotype. So I do think it's very, very harmful. And I don't think that it's helpful in terms of how we start to educate our kids. One of the things that I think that Dr. Pan touched on, and I think it's so important, is that, you know, we are here. I mean, there's so many different generations of Asian of Asians here. You know, we've got our first immigrant community, we've got second generation, third generation, fourth generation. And every one of us has experienced through that process as immigrants coming here for the first time, varying degrees of racism and inequality. And so the way that the Asians have adapted to that has really been a strong sense of community, has been a strong sense of just doing the hard work, putting your head down and doing the work. And so that has translated into educational achievement at some point. But I will tell you that first immigrant communities in the Asian Pacific Islander community still have the same challenges that all ethnicities do, right? And so this whole notion about the model minority of Asians, I think is also very dangerous and also a myth. And we've got to be able to break all stereotypes with respect to our community.
And speaking of stereotypes, Nilda, you and I have spoken about the diversity of the women that you serve at my sister's house. But take us back and give us some perspective. When people say the Asian American community or the Asian American Pacific Islander community, tell us what that community consists of. Because I think that sometimes people put a broad label on a lot of diversity that they don't take the time to understand.
Yes, and as Pat referenced, you know, first of all, there's different generations of the Asian Pacific Islander community. So the experience of the immigrants, recent immigrants, versus someone who's been fourth or fifth generation requires different services or different responses to them. So geographically, when you think of it, we may have people from China, Japan, the traditional, what people think of, the Philippines, Vietnam, even some Russian-speaking countries have some Asian history to it, Middle Eastern countries. We actually welcome anybody who walks in our door. But what we feel we do differently and do best is serving those from the Asian Pacific Islander community. So we have Hmong staff members, and all this requires like staff members or volunteers that can speak and relate to the different languages and to the culture. So there are almost 20 that we really serve well in terms of the languages and the cultural understanding, but there are many more within our Sacramento community of the dialects and of the different countries and the different generations of the Asian Pacific Islander community, and including the different leadership and the socialization that occurs.
Actually, Scott, one of the things I want to mention, and I appreciate what Nilda said, is that when we say Asian Pacific Islander, we're talking about people coming from the largest continent in the world and the largest ocean in the world. So we have a huge diversity of cultures. We have a huge diversity of languages, experiences that fall into that. And I think we also need to recognize that with that, you do, unfortunately, sometimes when we talk about things like the model minority myth, I think our Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders often may feel like they get neglected in that situation, right? So we paint the group with a broad brush at times. At the same time, though, as we see in COVID, while yes, we come from different backgrounds, and while a lot of the hate may be directed more at Chinese Americans, but yet it's actually directed toward the entire API community. We've seen Pacific Islanders being attacked around COVID, right? We've seen people from other parts of Asia being attacked for COVID as well. So in many ways, we have to deal with the sort of the diversity within our own API umbrella, recognizing that we do have different backgrounds and experiences that we come from. At the same time, the way that we're seen by the rest of the community is sometimes in similar ways. So when it came to COVID, people weren't trying to decide, well, you're Chinese, you're Korean, you're Vietnamese, you're South Asian, you're Pacific Islander, you're Native Hawaiian, so people still directed hate across the board. And I think you see that in the reports from that database.
Well, it's interesting. Pat, trying to make a comment?
No, I think Nelda was.
Oh, it's Nelda.
So I wanted to share a story of wasn't our client, but it was a Korean woman who was escaping a bad situation, putting down a deposit on a new place so she could flee her abuser, had the money, had the resources, and then was denied and basically was told because she was Asian and she might have COVID. And so those are the kind of things that we especially need to be able to protect our women, and that this COVID situation is making it harder.
It's interesting. These stories resonate. As a matter of fact, I just learned that a family member of mine who happens to be Japanese was at a vet office last week, and a woman with her daughter was in the office, and the woman said to her daughter, you need to move back because she's Chinese and she brought the virus. And, and so it does appear that there, first off, in the first instance, a wrong thing to do and a very horrible thing to do, but there is this broad brush. But it goes back, and Pat, I'd love it if you would comment on this. You know, there's a history in the Asian American experience that most recently was a part of a PBS special called Asian Americans that talked about that these types of phenomenon are not new and just related to COVID-19, but actually go back through the Asian American experience in this country. What is it that we as a country are either have forgotten or need to be reminded of related to how it is that we experience and essentially interact with our Asian American brothers and sisters?
Thank you, Scott. You know, Chinese Exclusionary Act, Japanese internment camp. I mean, the history of the Asian Pacific and Asian Pacific Islander experience here in America has been fraught with, you know, just continued racism, inequity, and has been so harmful to our communities. And, you know, and it's unfortunate to this day we continue to see that being played out over and over again. Part of, I think, our challenge as a community, and, you know, we're not as Nelda and Dr. Penn alluded to, you know, there's so many different types of ethnicities underneath our umbrella, right? And so part of the challenge, but part of the opportunity is having an understanding of the cultural nuances of each of our communities and elevating the discussion and elevating that dialogue. We as Asian Pacific Americans, and just culturally, and Scott, you and I talked about this, culturally, we are taught not to make waves. We are taught as a culture to assimilate. We are taught as a culture that you as an individual don't matter, but collectively as a unit, you matter. So some of the issues that keep confronting us, and it plays itself over and over again. I remember having a conversation with my father-in-law who was interned in a concentration camp during World War II, he and his family. You know, they were very dutiful, right? You know, they came, they took all of their possessions. They were escorted to a camp, you know, with their all of their other Japanese neighbors and community and folks that they didn't know. They didn't make any waves. In fact, many Japanese male Americans actually signed up enlisted in the U.S. Army, and you know were I mean, there's stories about how brave and you know and how well they served our America in that particular war. So we just have this tendency, I think, to not want to create conflict. And it's just been ingrained in the way that our culture behaves. So this conversation is long overdue because in talking to folks individually and collectively, a lot of community leaders within the API community here in California, we're just tired. And we want to be able to elevate this discussion nationally. And there are attempts to be able to do that. But it's hard to mobilize our communities in a lot of ways. And this plays itself out also in getting out the API vote, if you will. If you take a look historically at how Asians vote as opposed to other communities, you know, we're very low in those numbers. So I just think that part of it is cultural and we have to be able to talk about that in a real way.
Dr. Pan, that raises an issue. One of the topics that seems to have really created a lot of discussion, and as a matter of fact, there's a lot of debate, as I'm told, within the API community, is the new upcoming ballot initiative related to ACA 5, which just passed, related to repealing Prop 209, if I've got that correct.
Yes.
Give us an insight into the nature of that conversation, because that seems to be an issue that the API community has been very focused and energized on.
First of all, I want to say is that the API community at large supports ACA 5. We've seen this in repeated polling. There is a sub-segment of the API community that is opposed. They're concerned, and I understand because when my family's came to this country and I applied for college, they were concerned that their children, API, particularly Chinese American, may be discriminated against for admission, particularly to elite colleges, so that we could perform well on our grades and our test scores and so forth, and we would still not get in. And people are have been concerned about that. And I think that concern isn't necessarily unjustified either, but unfortunately the way they view this as a competition between an API candidate versus, let's say, a candidate from applicant who comes from another background. But I would say that the larger API community does support. Now, one of the things I want to sort of follow up with what Pat was saying, though, is that, the API community, while it is a community that has usually been in most places, less so in California, a significant minority. And I think it makes it hard, given both the diversity of our community in terms of people coming together and accepting this API umbrella versus saying, well, I'm from this particular part of Asia or this specific part of the Pacific Islands, has been a little bit of a challenge in unity within the community, but also our relationship also with the other ethnic and racial groups too. And I want to acknowledge that, frankly, it's the Black Americans who have been in the leadership role and who've taken the real brunt of racism here in this country. And there have been API have supported the Black community in this, in the fight for civil rights, but I need to acknowledge the leadership role Black Americans have taken in fighting for civil rights here in the United States. And then certainly in partnership with our Latinx partners as well, and the Black Americans, we need to work together to try to address racism, because this is something that cuts across the board. So we may have our own unique experiences with this, and this has been particularly highlighted and with COVID toward the API community, and that we've been more particular targets, but we also need to recognize, for example, racism is causing Black Americans to die at twice the rate of white Americans, even Asians, that COVID is infecting twice as many Latinos as white and even Asians. So we need to work together to address racism. Racism is hurting all of us. So, and COVID's just underscoring how much racism actually is leading to bad outcomes when it comes to a pandemic like COVID. So we need to work together. And I think ACA 5 is an opportunity for us to work together and really try to address at least one element of structural racism and make it work for a more equitable society for everyone.
When you talk about racism and its impact, Nilda, what it brings to mind for me is that you on your blog and in some of the published information on My Sister's House talk a lot about being able to really reach and meet the needs of the clients that you serve. What is it that, just to look at in particular, the aspect of community and healthcare that your agency provides, is it that you're delivering that essentially society is missing out on or is not able to really speak to as effectively?
Part of it is even begins with the outreach, right? If people don't know about the services that you offer, then they're not going to access them. And the way different communities, especially immigrant communities, they're not using mainstream media. They're not going to mainstream events. So you have to reach them in different ways, because otherwise, and it shows in the numbers, they're not going to come access the services. So that's part of it. Part of it too is also being able to respond well to the stories and to the pleas for help from the people calling. So when we have different Asian Pacific Islander community members, we try to make sure that there is someone that can understand their stories, that they can speak to that in the language of their choice. It's very difficult talking about domestic violence, especially when you're not supposed to be talking about what problems you have in your home, right? And so it's difficult talking about sexual assaults, difficult talking about other forms of abuse. So it's important that there is somebody who can understand and relate. And then there are little things of making sure that we have food that they can that they can relate to, that they can feel comfortable with, decor that they can relate to. So it's providing that environment. We refer to it as cultural-based healing. It's recognizing that trauma-based healing begins with understanding and respecting one's culture.
And Pat, when in the final analysis, when you look at the rich history of this community, what is it that fundamentally, in just a sentence or two, is America needs to know about the API community and its place in the fabric of America?
I think that that understanding of culture, that understanding of everybody's history is so important. I don't think, Scott, we're going to get far if we continue to label, if we continue to have these stereotypical images played out on our media. And what I'd like to see is really from the top down, right, from policymakers at every level, really start to have these types of discussions. Because wouldn't it be interesting, for example, I always thought about this as a requirement for kids when they're in school to actually be immersed in a different culture and a different experience as part of their as part of that requirement for them to learn. I mean, all this is just really about, and I think Nelda and Dr. Pan said it well, is how to learn to understand each other's culture, understand each other, and then be able to bring that together because this truly is a melting pot. And so what we really need to do, I think, is start with education.
All right. And I think we'll leave it there. Thank you all very much, and good luck, and wishing you much success in your work. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.